Thank you, Sherbet Underground, and welcome back to Roto-Rob Fantasy Baseball Weekly Podcast, heard every Thursday evening at 9 p.m. EST on Blog Talk Radio, as we infect the airwaves with our unique blend of fantasy baseball enlightenment. We're into early July now, which means the international free agent signing period begins today, so we may have some news coming down the pike soon about some signings that could affect your fantasy teams in the future. This week, the Angels got rid of general manager Jerry DePoto because he couldn't play nice with manager Mike Socha. Mike Montgomery continued to for the Mariners with a second straight shutout, and the young Kansas City Royal fan that gained national attention in the World Series last year lost his battle with cancer at the age of 7. We're going to cover some of these stories and many more over the next 45 to 50 minutes or so, so pull up a beanbag chair and get comfy. I'm Roto-Rob, and my guest this week, once again, is Roto-Rob.com MLB editor Michael Seff. How are you this evening, Michael?
I'm great, Rob. Thanks for having me. How are you?
My pleasure. Well, I'm not doing as well as Josh Hamilton, who came off the DL this week and paid immediate dividends with two hits and a run to help a Ranger offense that is finally healthy and rounding into form. So nice to see Hambone feeling good. I want to remind you the chat room and phone lines are open. Currently just me in the chat room. Feel free to join me. Anyone, guests, if you want to call in old school style, you can hit us up at 347-826-7358. Now, before we get to this week's top story, we run down what's going on over at rotorub.com. Every Sunday, we have the Wire Troll written by Michael. This week, highlighting Carlos Beltran, who's having a bit of a renaissance lately. Our outfield rankings are being worked on, should be released shortly, and soon starting pitchers to wrap up this year's positional rankings. Football. We've started work on the 2015 NFL draft kit, so watch for us to start rolling that out soon. The rankings are all done. We're just adding some strategy essays and profiles, and we'll start releasing them over the next couple of weeks, hopefully. Basketball, we are working on a 2015 draft recap, so stay tuned for that. And hockey, again, want to send best wishes for the continued recovery of NHL editor Dakota Case, who's finally had his breathing tube removed and is making progress, we are pleased to report. On the content side of things, watch for a 2015 NHL draft recap and also free agency recap coming soon. Nothing new to report on video games, but new games being added constantly, so check back soon. We are now four posts away from 4,125 in the site's history, so should hit that mark over the next few days. Finally, don't forget to check out our Instigator Sports Trip in the sidebar of the site. Test your sports knowledge or play against your friends. Have you tried that yet, Michael?
I haven't, but I will have to get on that.
Yeah, it's fun. Lots of baseball trivia there, and you can go head-to-head against whoever you want or challenge the site leader. And it's pretty cool. They give you like 10 seconds to answer a trivia question with like four choices. And it's good times. Anyhow, the big story tonight is Dallas Keuchel of the Houston Astros, who has, I mean, of course he broke through last year, but what he's doing this year, taking it to a whole new level. And I mean, at this point, you could easily argue that he is the best pitcher in the American League. What do you think, Michael?
He has been pretty darn good, and it's not completely out of nowhere because he actually had an ERA under 3 last year in 29 starts. But he's really given the Astros and fans hope that this team can be for real because at least they have an ace. They may not have the deepest pitching staff, but he's emerging, and he's got – incredible numbers this year, just leads the league in wins or in run average, starts, innings pitched, fewest hits per 9 innings. It's pretty impressive. And with some struggles that Felix Hernandez has had and Chris Sale missing some time with injury, I mean, right now, hard to argue against that.
Yeah, you know, 3 years ago, he first kind of came on our radar, and we recommended him as a waiver wire ad when he first came up that season anyhow. He sure has wound up becoming unbelievable. I mean, he shut out the Yankees last week, dominated the Royals this week for 8 shutout innings. As you mentioned, leads the American League in ERA, 2.03, leads the league in wins with 10, leads the league with 2 shutouts, leads the league in complete games. I mean, what's his recipe for success, Michael?
Well, he's not an overpowering guy by any stretch. Doesn't throw all that hard, but he keeps the ball down in the zone, as evidenced by only giving up 7 home runs this year in a very small ballpark. And I think, you know, being a left-hander, I don't want to say that that's an advantage if you have the same stuff as a right-hander. But, you know, when you're facing teams that have lefty-heavy lineups, it gives you an advantage. And he's been very durable. As I said, he leads the league in innings pitched. So just his ability to stay consistent throughout a game, I mean, I think there's an art in that that not every starter has. Some starters can be great for 4 or 5 innings but have one inning where they really implode. And Keuchel's kind of able to temper that throughout a game. And that's why he's been successful for, you know, over a large number of innings.
Yeah, you mentioned keeping the ball down. That's a real key there. And he really uses both sides of the plates well. He gets batters, you know, to expect away and then pounds them inside, changes speed, keeps them off balance. Not really a traditional ace. Like, you know, when you think of ace, you think of the dominating guy who's going to blow you away, get the 12, 13 strikeout kind of performance. You're not going to see that kind of thing out of Keuchel, but there's no doubt he definitely deserves to be an all-star this year. If he's not on that team, there's something absolutely wrong. What's impressed me, Michael, about Keuchel is his ability to bounce back. Like, for instance, June 20th, he was shelled in Seattle, worst start of the year. He was coming off a couple of so-so starts. Like, they were still quality starts. They were just so-so for him. You had to wonder if Cinderella's ball was over, perhaps. And what does he do since then? 2 starts, 17 shutout innings, 13 hits, 19 strikeouts, 1 walk. I mean, wow. That is a sign of a great pitcher. A guy, you know, who will shake off a bad start and then just, you know, or like a little somewhat of a slump, but never get into an extended slump. You know what I'm talking about?
Yeah. And that's why that's what's really helped him this year.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, you mentioned that he did have that breakout last year. It was a career year, in fact, but he's even been better this season. He's only 2 wins behind his total from all of last year. And the thing that's impressed me is he's getting through the innings quicker, which allows him to, you know, work so long. I mean, we talked about whether he's the best pitcher in the American League at this point. I mean, obviously, Felix is in the discussion as a Sale, as you mentioned. But this guy here, Keuchel, was pitcher of the month for the American League in both April and May. June wasn't quite as good, but I mean, still, that's pretty impressive. But I think the most impressive thing is that consistency. Like, the guy is a workhorse, and he's not, like, necessarily built like a workhorse, except for that great beard. But he's got only 6 innings in each of his last 28 starts. 28 starts in a row going at least 6 innings. That is the best run in the entire major leagues. And this is the kind of guy who saves your bullpen, because you know every 5 days, no matter what, well, for instance, every time he takes the mound, you're never going to have one of those meltdowns where your bullpen's got to pick you up for, like, 6 or 7 innings. Never going to happen. But, I mean, he saves the bullpen, and that is huge, right? You know, when you're trying to make the playoffs.
Well, especially for a team that doesn't have any other guy that is anywhere near that consistent. And last year, he did lead the league with 5 complete games for a really bad team and still went 12-9 through 200 innings even on the mark. So, yeah, that's very valuable, and I think that's why the Astros, you know, whether they make a big splash or not, I think they're going to go and try and assess their starting rotation. But they feel pretty good as Keuchel being their ace, even if, as you said, he doesn't profile as a true ace. But he gives you everything mm-hmm. that you'd want out of a number one starter in terms of durability, consistency, and keeping the ball in the ballpark.
Yeah, and you got to love the control. I mean, last year was even better, 2.16 walks per 9. This year it's up slightly, 2.24. But 2.72 walks per 9 throughout his 4-year career. So even before he started having success in the last couple of years, he was always very good about being around the zone. And, not your usual ace and overpowers hitters. We get that. But it's all about putting the ball on the ground. He's improved his ground ball rate each year, and he uses his defense. He simply gets hitters to hit weak grounders over and over again. And, I mean, that works. That's a recipe for success, you know? Like, you don't have to blow hitters away. You can get through innings quicker. Allows you to pitch deeper into games, which gives you more of a chance to earn wins, right? Because there's less people blow it if they don't have to pitch as many innings. You know, when you get to your eighth inning and ninth inning guys and hand it over to them, and there's you're assuring yourself of more wins. So, you know, I mean, obviously he is a more valuable pitcher in the real world than he is in fantasy, just simply because he averages less than 7 Ks per nine, and unless you're playing 4x4 ball, which, you know, is pretty rare these days, that is a factor. But I don't know. What do you think? Is this guy going to win the Cy Young this year? That's the big question.
Well, I think if the award were given out right now, yeah, he would. He deserves it, and he's been as valuable as any pitcher, not to mention as good as any pitcher. But when you look at the run that Chris Sale's had, a historic, what, 8 straight starts with at least 10 Ks, and you figure Felix Hernandez will be right there, and it's he's got a good shot. It's just will, you know, and it also may depend on what happens to the Astros the rest of the way. I think his value as the ace of that staff will be seen as is a lot greater than obviously if he's on a team that loses 85 games. So I like his chances right now, but we still got half a season to go, and we've seen pitchers miss time with injuries, and it figures to be a tight race. So he's going to have to continue to pretty much pitch at this level, I think.
Yeah. I mean, there's no doubt the Astros have leveled off over the last few weeks after their amazing start, but and that could be a factor in the second half. We shall see. I mean, no longer the American League's best team. They've been usurped by the Royals over the last couple of weeks. But, you know, he gets to that 20 wins, and he maintains the ERA around 2. It is going to be hard to top, that's for sure. Now, we're going to review some action around the bigs this afternoon. Plenty of baseball going on Thursday afternoon, as always. I was keeping my eye on San Francisco-Miami game, and this was a fascinating game because not only did we have the return of Jose Fernandez from Tommy John surgery for the Marlins, but Matt Cain was making his season debut coming off both surgery himself for San Francisco. So he had of the best pitchers in the National League who have been out all season and longer, in most cases, Fernandez since May of last year, Cain since July, and they were pitching today, going head-to-head. Now, obviously, some rust showed on both sides, but the Marlins wound up taking this game 5-4. As I said, Fernandez making his first start since May 9th of last year in the wake of Tommy John surgery, shook off a shaky opening inning and wound up hitting a homer, the second of his career, to help his team win and complete a 3-game sweep. The Marlins were really struggling before this series, but they've been keeping pace. Only 4 games back of the third-place Braves, and they're 7 up on the woeful fifth-place Phillies. For the Giants, this series really hurt them. They're now 3 back of the first-place Dodgers. And even the fifth-place Rockies are only 7 back, so they're hardly in a secure spot, the Giants, I mean. In fact, it's the first time the Marlins have swept the Giants at home in a series of at least 3 games since 1999, so footage this week. As I mentioned, July, elbow surgery. Fernandez wound up going 6 innings, giving up 7 hits and 3 runs. Not a bad start, right? But believe it or not, that's the most hits and earned runs he's given up in 21 career home starts. Just think about that. How good has this kid been right from the get-go of his career? He is now getting the win today. He's now 13-0 at home in his career, which ties the modern record for most consecutive wins without a loss at home to start his career. Major bonus points if you know whose record he tied there, Michael.
That's a tough one. Will I be surprised by the answer, or is it somebody obvious?
Yeah. Yeah, I'll give you a hint. It's a team that doesn't exist anymore. Well, it's a team that moved. And that guy has the same name as a character from the show 24.
Well, I only know Jack Bauer from that show. Is there a pitcher named Jack Bauer?
No, there isn't. I mean, there have been some Bowers, Hank Bauer, for instance, but it was Jim Palmer. David Palmer. He has the same name, David Palmer. Like on the TV show, he played the president.
Right.
And then the Montreal Expos had a pitcher, David Palmer, who between 79 and 84 did not lose at home. But he was also 13-0 to start his career. So obviously not known for anything else other than that, but an impressive run for his career. It's just one of those obscure things where he, for whatever reason, never lost at home early on in his career. And Jose Fernandez, who I'm sure will go on to be recognized for feats greater than that. Well, I mean, he already has been. Like, he was already a Rookie of the Year, so there you go. So anyhow, for the Giants today, Gregor Blanco had the big stick. He was 2-for-4 with two of the runs, an RBI, struck out once, got a homer for his 16th rib of the year. Did commit an error, but got his on-base percentage up to .384. He's hit safely in 9 straight games, raising his batting average 44 points in the process. He's been making more starts, and small wonder with that on-base percentage. Hitting very well in a part-time role, I think he deserves more playing time, to be honest, and is worth a look in NL-only leagues based on what he is doing, I think. Kane suffered the loss in 5 innings. He was ripped for 7 hits, 5 runs. He struck out 2. He walked 4, gave up 2 homers. Through 89 pitches, 51 of them strikes. His ERA sits at 9. Obviously, rusty his first time out, but sounded like he was impressed, felt good. He was healthy, and that's the key. There's actually a chance he is still unowned in your league, so you better snatch him up, as he could be a fine asset in the second half. For the Fish, it was Justin Bour. He did it again. He had a walk-off dinger on Wednesday. Today, 1-for-3 with a 3-run homer. Also drew a walk. That's his 9th homer of the year. He's up to 20 RBI. His on-base percentage is up to .340. He's now slugging .496. Hit safely now in 4 straight games, homering in each of the last 3. I think he needs to be given a look in NL-only leagues, and I'm loving the extra base pop and productivity lately. So Fernandez got the double, and that's 6 Ks, no walks, 21 balls, his ERA is 4.50. 0 walks and 21 balls out of 89 pitches. Impressive command for a guy. I mean, you definitely expect some lack of command after Tommy John surgery, and for him to not walk anyone says a lot. He reached 99 miles an hour in the gun, so he can still bring the heat, and he could really help stabilize the Marlins in the second half. Over in the American League, Indians playing the Rays today, Michael. Went down in Tampa Bay.
Yeah, the other side of Florida. And I just want to point out, that's pretty impressive. Not only you come back from Tommy John surgery to pitch well, but hit a home run as well, making impact with the bat. Not going to make anyone forget about Giancarlo Stanton, but doesn't hurt to get some production from the manhole like that.
Fernandez is not a bad hitter. He's over 200 for his career, and that's pretty good for a pitcher.
Absolutely, absolutely. And speaking of pitchers coming back from Tommy John surgery, in the same state we had Matt Moore making his long-awaited return. And remember we talked just now about Dallas Keuchel and how he's able to kind of pace himself throughout a game? Well, in Matt Moore's first start back, didn't really pace himself very well. He was locked down for 3 innings, looked great, but ran into trouble in the 4th and 5th innings, and the Indians ultimately won this game 5-4 on a Mike Avila's home run in the top of the 10th. Of course, the big story, Matt Moore, and while he was great through 3 shutout innings, his final line, not as impressive, and of course it is his first start in over a year. 4 earned runs in 4 2/3, gave up 6 hits, walked 2, struck out 4, and I seem to remember there was a time when this guy came up and he was throwing high 90s, and he's barely 91, 92 now, and maybe they'll build that arm strength up back a little bit. But on the other side, there was a former Cy Young who was wheeling and dealing, Corey Kluber, 14 strikeouts, and he has been on an absolute roll. Remember, he had an 18-strikeout game against St. Louis a couple of months ago. He went 8 innings and gave up 4 runs, 3 earned, 7 hits, 1 walk, 14 strikeouts, but ultimately it was Avilas deciding this game in the top of the 10th on the first pitch he saw from Xavier Cedeno. Avilas, who's dealing with a tough personal situation, as people know, came through with a big hit, actually scored a couple of runs on the day. It was his 4th homer of the year. This after the teams went back and forth. Tampa Bay had a 2-0 lead, but then in the 4th and 5th innings, the Indians got 4 runs in those 2 frames. Tampa Bay got 2 back in the 6th to tie it, and then neither team scored until Avilas broke through in the 10th. But really, this was a great game to watch if you want to see Corey Kluber look like the Corey Kluber of 2014, because he's starting to find it, even though he doesn't have the wins and losses to show for it. He really pitched outstanding today, although the win ended up going to Brian Shaw in relief, his first of the year. a perfect inning and two strikeouts, and then Cody Allen striking out the side for his 15th save. So Cleveland's bullpen coming in, doing the job after Kluber left. And even though Tampa Bay's bullpen only gave up the one run, turned out to be a costly one. And for Tampa Bay, it has to be a little concerning how poorly this team has played at home this year. They just finished a homestand in which they went 2-8. They had played in Cleveland before that, won 2 out of 3 in Cleveland, but they are really, really scuffling at home. So perhaps this is a time to get out on the road, as they will be playing the Yankees coming up here. And it's got to be a little puzzling, wouldn't you think, Rob, when a team can't win at home but is actually pretty good on the road? Because at Tampa Bay, it just they can't get it done at the Trop.
It's weird. Yeah, I mean, Tampa Bay historically has generally been very good at Trop, and if you can't take care of business at home, you're in trouble. That's it. You know, I mean, I don't care how good you're on the road. You have to be able. It's all about home cooking. You got to be able to win at least 55% of your games at home to have any hope at all.
We talked about that earlier last week with Cleveland and how they struggled at home against Detroit. Tampa Bay is 21-27 at home, and they're 21-12 on the road. I'm not sure what's more shocking.
Wow.
Records disparity or the fact that they've actually played 15 more home games than they have on the road, but that apparently isn't a problem for them considering how much better they are away from the old Thunderdome.
Well, both records are shocking. 21-12 on the road is phenomenal, and 21-27 at home for a team that is as good as Tampa Bay is shocking as well. So you were talking about the Indians. I was keeping an eye on their AL Central rival, Detroit, today. They were playing some interleague ball against the Pirates, hoping to salvage one of the 3-game series at home against the Pirates, who are playing much better lately, but it was not to be. Francisco Liriano was fantastic today, and the Pirates completed their 3-game sweep. They're playing much better lately. Although the Cards continue to play amazingly well, so Pittsburgh hasn't been able to really make a dent in that lead, but they have moved now 2.5 games ahead of the third-place Cubs, so they're starting to put a little bit of distance there in terms of trying to turn this into a two-team race in the NL Central. Detroit, meanwhile, spins lately. You know, still only 2 games back. Second place lead, fifth place White Sox are only 4 back of the third place Tigers. So Detroit needs to kind of look below them as well. The American League Central is a tight division, really tight. Liriano tossed a gem against the Tigers way back early in the 2010 season, but since then, it has been a shit show whenever he faces them. They've owned him. 14 games, 11 of them starts. He's gotten 1-9. Finally exacted some vengeance today. Detroit didn't even get a runner past second base against him, scoring all of its runs late against the bullpen. For the Pirates, Neil Walker, second straight four-hit game. What a series he had. He went 10-17 with 7 RBI to raise his batting average 19 points in 3 games. It is pretty hard for a regular to raise his batting average 19 points in late June, early July. So, wow, that is one impressive run. The Pirates wound up outscoring Detroit in the series 22-11, convincing sweep. In fact, today they scored one run in every inning from the 4th to the 7th, and then were spot in the 9th to provide the difference in the game. As I said, Walker, the big stick today, 4-for-5, 3 RBI. 20th double of the year. He's up to 30 RBI now. His on-base percentage up to .346, and he's slugging .421. He'd actually been in a major slump, especially power-wise and productivity-wise, before this run, but now he's on a 6-game hitting streak, and he could be available in your league, so take a look at your wire. That's 6 straight years with at least 20 doubles for Walker, and he's on pace to top 40 for the first time ever. Liriano lasted 7 innings, gave up 5 hits, no runs, struck out 5, walked 3, threw 104 pitches, 61 of them for strikes, got the W to improve to 5-6 and lower his ERA to 2.99. He's usually good for about 1 stinker per month, but has looked great in his last 2 outings. And check out his batting average against, a career best 190, thanks to just 70 hits allowed in 102 third and one-third innings this year. Very impressive hit ratio there for Liriano. Mark Melanson got the at the only batter he faced for his 25th save, has trimmed his ERA to a very tidy 1.66. So much for worries about his velocity that were being talked about earlier this year. He has not given up an earned run since May 11th. Melanson's been a bit easier to hit this year, but has now put together back-to-back 25 save seasons as he's become a very dependable closing option. Over to the NL Central, back to the NL only, we had the Cubs and Mets going on at Citi Field this afternoon there, Michael. Keep an eye on that one, and Michael's got the lowdown.
Yeah, and by the way, speaking of teams that have struggled at home, the Tigers, another one of those sub-500 at Comerica Park. They're going to have to get that straightened out. And then at Citi Field, we had another team that was unable in this series to take advantage of playing at home. The Mets, who coming into this series were 29-11 at Citi Field, ended up getting swept by the Chicago Cubs. They lost this game today 6-1, but the more alarming stat is that in three games at home against the Cubbies, the Mets scored a grand total of one run. And this was after the uplifting performance on Sunday by Steven Matz in his Major League debut. Mind you, Matz drove in four runs in his Major League debut. The Mets collectively as an offense since scored one run. And if you're wondering, that was actually the pitcher, Jacob DeGrom, who scored the run on a Curtis Granderson a double in this game. But really, the story today was Jake Arrieta. And, you know, the Cubs, they're just playing in the wrong division, but at 42-35, coming off a sweep, they're currently in a wild card spot. The Mets, on the other hand, have really been scuffling, had a long losing streak, then won a few, and now they've kind of fallen off again as the Nats are really taking off in the East. Jake Arrieta today was absolutely phenomenal. Got his eighth win of the year, went eight strong innings, allowed just one run on five hits, and here's a good command for you. No walks, seven strikeouts, lowered his ERA to 2.8. He did hit a batter, but very, very sharp. Travis Wood finished the game with a scoreless inning. And for the Mets, Jacob DeGrom did not pitch like the Jacob DeGrom we're used to seeing. He got the loss. Despite going 5 1/3, gave up four runs, three earned on seven hits, walked two, struck out two. His ERA rises to 2.3. You know you're having a pretty good year when your ERA can rise to 2.3. But he falls to 8-6. Again, the only offense for the Mets coming in this game was a third-inning RBI double by Curtis Granderson, but it was the Cubs doing a lot of the offensive damage. They hit two home runs in this game, including the first of the season for Jonathan Herrera, who got start today at third base. It was his first of the year. It was a two-run shot. And Miguel Montero adding some insurance in the ninth with a two-run shot, his 10th of the year, and he's driven in 28 runs. Anthony Rizzo also driving in a run. He's got 45. And really, this was just another game where the Mets were just plagued by lack of offense. It's got to be very, very concerning for them, considering the starting pitching has been pulling its weight. The bullpen continues to struggle, but when the offense scores one run in three games, it doesn't matter who you play, you're not going to win. So that was what the Cubs did. They complete the sweep coming off of a tough sweep that they suffered in St. Louis as Jake Arrieta out-dueling Jacob DeGrom, and that was the day action that we were keeping our eye on.
All right, it's interesting you talk about the Mets because I was actually going to bring them up shortly, but first I want to talk about Rick Porcello's struggles for Boston. There's now talk about him skipping his spot in the rotation. Boston may skip his spot until after the break to give him some downtime. For the last 5 weeks, he's simply been dreadful, and he hit rock bottom against the Jays on Wednesday. Gave up seven hits, seven runs, three homers in two innings. In 16 starts this year, he's now been tagged for 16 homers. He's just struggling to execute his pitches. His ERA is now over six, second highest in the majors, clinging to his rotation spot, barely. I mean, especially the way Brian Johnson is looking at AAA right now. Porcello's rate is actually up this year quite a bit, but killing him. His ground ball rate keeps falling, but, I mean, I think he's been better than his bottom line results suggest. I look at his FIP, it's 4.61, still not very good, but his ex-FIP is 4.02, which is acceptable. I think if he can get a hold of the gopheritis and get back to inducing ground balls, the results will improve dramatically, but something needs to change here because the Sox can't keep trotting him out there every 5 days and continue to entertain the notions of getting back into the postseason race. What do you think of what's going on with Porcello in Boston, the struggles there, and if something needs to be done?
Well, I've wondered about, you know, the pitcher changing teams. And, you know, the thing with Rick Porcello is he's never really been an ace. He's never had to be. He's always been on a really good pitching staff, obviously, in Detroit. And it's interesting that now he's really being called on to be a big part of this Boston rotation. I mean, they were thrilled that they were able to pick him up in a deal, even though they gave up Yoenis Cespedes. And my first reaction was that it's got to be Fenway Park, maybe it's Fenton. But when you look at his splits, he's been much worse on the road. He's 1-5 with a 7.16 ERA on the road, which makes being 3-4 with a 4.93 ERA not look nearly as bad at home. I agree that maybe he's had a little bit of bad luck. It's been that kind of year for the Red Sox. They've been involved in a lot of slugfest-type games, and that can certainly wear on a pitcher. And also, you got to remember the team that fired their pitching coach. That's, you know, you don't think of that as necessarily a big thing, but when a pitcher's got to continue to make adjustments or feel like he's hearing different voices, that could obviously impact him a little bit too. But I think it's probably a good idea, give him a little bit of a breather, because he's really been roughed up. When his starts have been bad, mm-hmm. they've been really bad, not just, you know, hey, 5 runs in 5 innings. We're talking straight up, you know, he's getting shelled out there. So this may not be a bad thing. Clearly, he's a guy that's been successful in the past. He's got good stuff. It's probably been partially a product of not being able to get a sinker down when you're a sinker baller who's not getting a ton of ground balls. It's obviously going to be tough for you. So I'm not surprised at all
by
the move, the way that he's going for Boston, and that's probably just a move John Farrell feels that he can't be any worse. We might as well give him a little time to recuperate here.
Well, I mean, it's really very simple. If you're a ground ball pitcher and you're not getting ground balls, you're going to get beat up. And if you're a ground ball pitcher and you're inducing ground balls, it really doesn't matter what park you're pitching at, right? Like, your splits are going to be pretty standardized there. But clearly something needs to give there. Did you have any other news items you wanted to bring up tonight there,
well,
Michael? I had a couple
things
in the bag.
It's funny. We were talking about the NL Central before, and here's what I want to know from you. If it seems clear that the Cardinals are the obvious best team in the National League and probably in baseball, who's the second best team? And I wonder if that second best team is residing in the Cardinals division, because to be honest, Rob, I'm not completely sold on the Nats and the Dodgers, because they're carrying what I like to call playoff baggage. And that can be something that's very difficult to shed. And, even like the Pirates, granted they haven't won in the playoffs, but yeah, what are your thoughts on that?
Oh, I absolutely believe in this. I can't remember if it was you on the podcast or someone else, but we talked about it on the podcast. I don't think it was last week, it might have been a few weeks ago, but we were talking about the Pirates and the Cardinals' big lead, and I said, don't count the Pirates out. Because of that pitching stuff, they're going to win a shitload of games. It's just when you trot out someone who's going to be able to get you into the sixth or seventh inning almost every single day, that's just, you know, if they get just enough hitting and they have a solid bullpen, Melanson's been great, you know, like get some decent middle relief, they're going to be there. They're absolutely going to be there. That Pirate pitching rotation, top to bottom, is phenomenal. So, yeah, I'm sold on the Pirates.
It's interesting because, you know, I look at the Dodgers and they've got the star power. And I look at the Nats and those teams, and like the Tigers too, I look at those teams as they've got a lot of star players, but as a full team, it's a little bit different. And as you said, the Pirates have a rotation that continues to give them innings, and that's important because I don't think their actual middle relief is all that reliable. But when you look at the back end of their bullpen with Watson and Melanson, the only thing I worry about is overuse with those guys. They play so many tight games. I believe they played, or I thought I saw the stat that Melanson has the most appearances among closers. I know he was leading the league in saves, but they've really relied heavily on those guys, and they've done a good job. And you look at the other teams too. It's not just, okay, well, they've got issues as far as depth, but the Dodgers have consistently gotten beaten by the Cardinals in the playoffs. The Nationals, it's going to be hard for them to shake what's happened in their last two, their only two playoff appearances. So, you know, with the Pirates, it's almost like they can't win the division. I don't see them pushing St. Louis with the kind of year St. Louis is having, but if there's any team that might give them a series, I feel the Pirates might be the one team.
Yeah, it's quite conceivable. It is quite conceivable. When you have that kind of pitching, I mean, great pitching can shut down great hitting. It's that simple. So we shall see how that plays out. It's going to be fun to watch. The National League, come playoff time, I mean, obviously, who makes the playoffs and how it's going to shake. Can San Francisco finally bust their odd year thing, you know, their even odd year thing. Speaking of San Francisco, another little tidbit I wanted to bring up, Santiago Casilla, who was rocked Wednesday, and now it's been announced he's going to get a few days off, according to manager Bruce Bochy. He gave 3 hits and 3 runs on the walk-off homer that I talked about, the Justin Bour shot, without recording an out to suffer the loss, his 4th blown save in 24 tries. But, I mean, I don't know, was this like a quick trigger there, Michael? This was the first time Casilla blew a save or was even scored on since May 31st, so it's not like he's been struggling. So the Giants are reacting really quickly here, and that makes me wonder, is there some kind of health concern? They talked about arm fatigue. But,
well,
you know, I mean,
well,
I get when a closer has a couple bad outings in a row that's like, okay, you know what, you need a little downtime. But the guy hadn't been scored on since May 31st, and he put up a shitty effort. Okay, it happens, right?
Well, yeah, I have two schools of thought on that. Because, one, you're talking to a guy that wrote an article about a month ago that said Santiago Casilla was probably the most underrated closer in the game. But the Giants kind of had this pattern of flip-flopping with the closers a little bit, because remember a couple of years ago in 2012, Brian Wilson underwent Tommy John, and it was Casilla initially, and then he struggled, and then they went to Romo, and of course Romo was the guy that they rode throughout the postseason. Then in 2014, a year ago, Romo was the guy, and he ran into a string, a much longer string, not just one bad outing. He had a number of really rough blown saves. And then Casilla took over, and Casilla became the guy, again, as he was supposed to be 2 years ago, and they really rode him as their closer to the postseason. So I'm not sure why they would have such a quick trigger. You're right, it could be a health concern. It could be a concern that Bruce Bochy's seeing something stuff-wise, mechanically, that's not right. That's always the first thing I think of, or at least after injury, I mean, because that's the obvious one. But yeah, clearly to say we're going to rest a guy who just blew his first save in a couple of months, gave up runs for the first time in a couple of months, seems a bit of a reaction. So my hunch would be it's either an injury or some sort of mechanical issue that Bruce Bochy sees that he wants to tweak before he sends him back out there.
I think there's more than meets the eye. And, of course, in the interim, as you mentioned, Romo and possibly Javier Lopez could be in line for some saves over the weekend. So consider those as options in a daily fantasy league at any rate. You know, it's funny that you talked about the Mets struggling offensively, because that was one of the tidbits that caught my eye this week. You mentioned the one run in the 3-game series against the Cubs, which is just ridiculous, especially at home. But it dates back further than that, Michael. The last 14 games, they only have 23 runs. And through 80 games, we're almost halfway through the season now. How many times do you think they've scored one run or less through 80 games?
Yeah, 80 games. I think I saw this stat. I want to say it's got to be 20, but I
21,
I
yeah. 21.
21, yeah.
21 times over a quarter of the time they're scoring one run or less. And yeah, that it's a team of aces now, so much so that they can't figure out who to trade or and they've got so many freaking starters to, you know, on that team and great young talent, you know, with Matz emerging now. And it's like, I don't care if you have 5 Sandy Koufaxes. When you're only scoring one run a game that often, you're not going to be winning. You know, I jotted down some notes here, and like in terms of the main culprits, Eric Campbell has a 540 OPS and trying to replace David Wright. Okay, that's problem number one, the biggest problem. Ruben Tejada is walking less and striking out more. That's hurting. Rookie Kevin Plawecki, who I love his upside, he's showing a bit of extra base pop, but he's no Travis d'Arnaud at this stage of his career. Wilmer Flores, a ready lame walk, is down even more. Michael Goddard, who I don't know why they spent all that money on him, be slugging 365. Really? I mean, 365? And for whatever reason, Luka Duda, his homers have become doubles this year. those are the main culprits I'm looking at, but anything I'm missing here, like in terms of what with this offense, they need to fire their hitting coach or what?
Well, my first thought is just how much do they miss David Wright? Although not that David Wright is the, answer to all their problems offensively if they ever get him back. But yeah, I was puzzled with the Kadire deal. I never quite understood that. I mean, he was a guy that was consistent in Minnesota, but played at Coors Field. You know, I never got that. I never saw him as any kind of an answer. Curtis Granderson went through a little bit of a surge, power surge with home runs. He's up to 13 to lead the club. They've got, Wilmer Flores has 10 homers, but he's hitting .232. There's not one guy that can carry them. I mean, even with some of the numbers they put up.
Granderson's actually having a decent year. I'm not singling him out. But, there are others I expect that are just, they should not be in a major league lineup, I don't think,
Well, yeah. You mentioned Eric Campbell, and that's what separates the really good teams from the middle of the pack or also-ran teams is when you have a guy go down, you need somebody that can be an adequate replacement. And Eric Campbell's batting .171 with two homers. The sad thing is he's actually tied for the lead on the team in stolen bases with 5, but he's really, as you said, brought no value, slugging, .264? That's incredibly low for, anybody, let alone a guy that's replacing the face of the franchise. Yeah, there's not a lot of power, but there's just not a lot of guys that are they don't have that chemistry. This isn't a lineup. Whatever they're doing is not working.
And I realize you kind of gave Campbell a backhanded compliment there with the 5 stolen bases, but that is a problem because if you don't have power, you better be manufacturing runs and stealing bases, right? You better be moving runners over and trying to steal.
Right.
And obviously you need the personnel in place to do that, but 5 steals as your leader in halfway through the year, almost. Well, 80 games, right? We're halfway through the season. Tomorrow marks game 81. So it's like, really, not even get a double-digit steal guy. And you're playing in a park that does not self-power. So what kind of lineup are you trying to create here?
Well, yeah, and also I think a big problem we're kind of overlooking is they really don't have any kind of a bench either. And I guess that goes hand in hand with a team that's not scoring runs, but they're counting on guys like John Mayberry, who's sticking around in the majors despite hitting .190 with 3 homers. He's really lost at the plate. Guys like Darren Siciliani, maybe there's hope for him in the future, .237. There's not only is there not depth, obviously they're not getting the production from their starters, but they don't have anybody that even can get plugged in and maybe give them a little spark just to liven things up. And so you're right.
Because the fact of the matter is guys like Ruben Tejada and Wilmer Flores should be their bench players. They should be the guys coming off the bench. And at this stage of his career, Michael Kadire's a hop, skip, and jump from being a bench player. I know he had those 2 amazing years in Colorado, although he was hurt a lot. PSs were like unbelievably phenomenal. The Mets bought in and gave the contract. It's like, duh, did you look at his home road splits? I mean, his home road splits were like 400 points in OPS lower on the road. Duh. It's like, how could you not have seen this coming? Like, Kadire had the most Coors inflated numbers of all time the last couple of years. In this stage and age of analytics that are available to us, and I'm sure it's just a smidgen of what's available to a major league team, in terms of the data set that you have and the numbers and the proper training to analyze those numbers, ostensibly, and you still go and sign Kadire for a multi-year deal at his age, but whatever, you know what? That's why I just play a GM on TV. I'm not a real GM.
Right.
So we were talking about the Cardinals before being the best team in baseball, but they're not without their controversy, Michael. I mean, of course, you heard about the hacking episode and the FBI investigation. Well, today, the first casualty from that hacking scandal and the Cardinals fired their scouting director, Chris Correa. They say it's not connected, but I mean, of course it's connected. And the FBI is currently investigating whether the Cards gained illegal access to Houston's player personnel database. I think there could be more fallout to come from this. it's very cloak and dagger, and wow, I mean, this is a really, the Cardinals are always, have this reputation as being, you know, the model franchise and everything, but clearly even the model franchise can have some strange back, you know, cloak and dagger dealings and, you know, some shady characters, right? Like, have you been following this story at all?
Yeah, a little.
And that, the more it's weird, eh?
Watch them. They remind me of the New England Patriots.
Oh, like Deflategate. Yeah, I guess. It's kind of weird. I'm really interested to see how this shakes out. It's just, it's a very, you know what I mean? It's got that, like, cyber terrorism component to it. And, it's kind of neat. I think Korea is just the beginning, though. I think there could be more down the road here. You had any other news stories?
Yeah, well, no, just to follow up, I mean, I haven't seen a team with this dominant a start either, and I think it sort of fuels – the Cardinals are not – they never seem like public enemy number one because I think the media always hypes up the Yankees and the Red Sox. Even the Dodgers and the Giants,
sure.
they're kind of this team – you know, yeah, they the self-proclaimed greatest fans in baseball, but this team has had an unbelievable run of success here of late, especially.
Oh, yeah.
And you think about the way that they almost divine how they won that 2011 World Series, coming from 10.5 games back, and then being down to their last strike on two different occasions, and pulling that out. And I think it's sort of that people are starting to take more notice of them. They're becoming a little more of an enemy in the eyes of a lot of people, not just Cubs and Pirates fans and whatnot. So this story, I think it's interesting timing with them having the kind of incredible year that they're having. This kind of brings them into a different public light. I don't know that they're in the same class as, say, the Patriots and Deflategate, but it's a big deal. And when you have the FBI investigating, this isn't just, you know, Roger Goodell hearing, you know, listening to a hearing,
right.
This is big stuff. So, really, a big
yes.
story.
It is. I'm going to be interested to see how it ultimately shakes out and just how nefarious the Cardinals' activities ultimately were. Any other news stories you were following this week that you wanted to bring to the table there, Michael?
No, I just I think it's interesting as we're getting here towards the end of the first half and. The All-Star game, and we'll have to talk about this when it gets a little closer, although it is pretty close. But I'm just not a fan of the home field advantage being decided in an exhibition game featuring a bunch of mid-season All-Stars. So
yeah. Don't get me started. That's long been a pet peeve. Well, just one of the I admire the process. Let's make the All-Star game count, but to give such significance to an All-Star game, yeah, whatever. My head will explode, so let's move on. I'm gonna have to get some theme music for the next portion of our show where you put your pimp hat on and plug something away. So go ahead and put your furry hat on with your feather in it and pimp away. What's going on in the world of Michael Sepp that you want everyone to know about?
Well, I just wanted to just keep pushing everybody over to draftamerica.com, and I'm also writing for MLB Outside Pitch, so just trying to keep up. And I was going to bring this up, but since we sort of covered all the news, I have an article on the Blue Jays being one of the most statistically fascinating teams that we've ever seen, at least through half the season, with an incredible run differential, an incredible offense, and yet they are mired in fourth place, albeit only by a game. And this has just been so fascinating to watch a team that can be this exciting and yet not be really that good at its core.
Well, it's pretty simple. They lead the majors in blown saves, right? You got to be able to finish games out. And you know what really makes me laugh is that Pat Neshek, they were kicking the tires on Pat Neshek. They were kicking the tires on Luke Gregerson. Anyone could have had Francisco Rodriguez. Jays could have had him. And now the Jays are talking about trading for him. They could have had him for nothing. Well, I mean, they would have obviously signed him, but now they're going to have to give up, you know, prospects to if they want to bring him on or someone of that ilk. And it's like, yeah, I don't know. I mean, maybe Roberto Osuno, who was in the wire troll this week, a great call there. Maybe he's the answer, but, you know, simply keep blowing it late.
Yeah, yeah, you got it. As you said, the bullpen has been a culprit. Really, the starting staff has been almost as much of a culprit. I believe they're 24th in team ERA, 23rd in starters ERA.
Yeah.
Now, even so, you would think with the kind of offensive numbers that they have, and a plus 86 run differential was going into yesterday, I think, you would think that they would still be able to at least mask that in the regular season. Certainly there'd be concerns about the playoffs, but they have to do something about their pitching staff. And I mentioned that in there, but that really, as you said, the blown saves, they're 9-15 in one run games. I don't want to give away the whole article, but basically that's, we know that it's pitching that's holding them back, but they have been a very fascinating team to watch. Nonetheless, probably the most exciting one in baseball.
Yeah, I guess. I'm not a Jay fan, so.
No, I know. I know. But
yeah.
Even so, you know, the type of games that they've played been amazing. So that's where I'm at. How about you? Anything to plug?
No. not really. I mean, just, you know, as I mentioned up front, want people to look at that Instigator thing. And we have some exciting news soon, but I won't reveal it yet. But it does involve, well, just a little teaser. We're coming out with an app, a RotoRob.
Okay.
So, there'll be some news about that soon. Just on the back end stuff, and you know, getting all our ducks in the row there. So, stay tuned for news on that. I'll bring that up on the next podcast as we get a little, probably have some more details. And that's about a wrap. I want to thank you very much for joining us tonight, Michael. Pleasure as always.
Thank you.
I'm gonna end the show once again with some Sean Mulrain, and we'll see you all next week. Have yourself a good week.
Thanks. Night, everybody.